We are officially starting Sefer Shmuel Bet.
Officially? Okay.
Wow.
Right. That is correct. We have finished Shmuel Aleph, and we are starting Shmuel Bet.
I think I need to catch up.
Right. Hello, everyone.
Well, we're gonna do a quick review of the last chapter of Shmuel Aleph anyway, because the first chapter of Shmuel Bet is the continuation of the story of the last chapter of Shmuel Aleph. So you can't do one without a review of the other. So we will get there. As we've identified a number of different contexts, the chapter divisions of Tanakh are not of Jewish origin. And in fact, some of the divisions of books are not even of Jewish origin, because the chapter divisions go hand in hand. And so the division of Sefer Shmuel into two books, Shmuel Aleph and Shmuel Bet, is part of the division of the chapters of the text. Meaning, in the world view of Chazal, there's only one book. It's called Sefer Shmuel. There isn't a division of 1 Samuel and 2 Samuel. The same thing is true of the Book of Kings. Malachim Aleph and Malachim Bet is not a division of Jewish origin. The same thing is true of Divrei Hayamim. Chronicles. The same thing is true of the division of the books of Ezra and Nehemiah into two books, because in Chazal it's one book, Ezra, Sefer Ezra, which is the story of Ezra and Nehemiah. Why these books were divided as they were is somewhat of a mystery, because in many instances it is not only not of Jewish origin, but it's somewhat illogical in terms of the location of where the books are divided. The classic example is the Book of Kings. Why divide? We haven't studied the Book of Kings from Malachim, but why divide in the middle of a story? It literally divides in the middle of a story. There is virtually no rhyme or reason for the location of the division between Malachim Aleph and Malachim Bet. In our case, in Sefer Shmuel, we're also in the middle of a story, and really, there you could argue that the first chapter of Shmuel Bet is really the end of Shmuel Aleph. The only reason why the book divides here, at least on some logical level, is because the last chapter was the death of Saul. And so Shmuel Aleph is essentially the story of Saul and Saul's reign, and David's reign is the subject of Shmuel Bet. There is a logic to say you divide them at the moment of Saul's death, which is the last chapter of Shmuel Aleph. There would be another compelling logic to say that deal with the story of Shmuel's death until its conclusion, which is the end of the chapter 1 of Shmuel Bet, in which David finds out about Saul's death and he mourns for Saul and he offers very famous elegy or kina, which we will study at length, and then start the rise of David's own reign after dealing with the aftermath of Saul's death. That would probably have, if we were to have divided the book, that's probably how we would have divided it. So this first chapter that we are studying, Shmuel Bet Perek Aleph, is really a postscript to the final chapter of Shmuel Aleph. That gives us an opportunity to both start a new book and review the old book. That wasn't why they did it, but nonetheless, it's as good a reason as any to do a quick review. So, having said that, let's do a quick review of the last chapter of Shmuel Aleph, and then we will start Shmuel Bet. Perek Lamed Aleph of Shmuel Aleph was the war between the Plishtim and Israel on Mount Gilboa in Emek Israel and Har Gilboa, a battle that had been looming for some time in terms of the chapters of the book. We really started with the story of Saul going to the Ein Dor, to the Baalat Ov, and hearing that he's going to go into battle and he's going to die in battle, and at the same time David in Ziklag, swearing loyalty to Achish, having to go with the forces of the Plishtim up north. Achish exempts David from that obligation. David comes back down to Ziklag. He finds that it's been overrun by Amalek. Goes and he destroys the Amalek group, tribe, that had captured all of the women and children from Ziklag, frees them, brings them back to Ziklag. He's sitting in Ziklag. That's the world of David. In the meantime, Saul goes into battle. Uflishtim nilchamim v'Yisrael. Plishtim were fighting against Israel. V'yanusu anshei Yisrael mipnei plishtim. Israel fled or was fleeing from the plishtim, meaning clearly this was a battle that was not going well for Israel. They were one of the great defeats of Israel at the hands of the plishtim. V'yiplu chalalim b'har hel gabor. Everybody see where I am? I'm just reading the last chapter of the previous. V'yiplu chalalim b'har hel gabor. Many casualties fell on Mount Gilboa. V'yadbeku plishtim et Shaul v'et banav. Plishtim caught or reached Shaul and his sons. V'yakub plishtim et Yohanatan v'et Avinadav v'et Malkishua b'nei Shaul. The plishtim smote or hit or injured Yonatan, Avinadav, Malkishua, the sons of Shaul. V'tichbad mechama el Shaul. The battle was great, intense. V'yimtza'u hamorim anashim bakashet. And the sharpshooters with the arrows caught up to Shaul. V'yachel me'od mi'amorim. Simple pshat is that he was very afraid of the morim, of these sharpshooters. V'yomer Shaul lunase kelav. Shaul turns to his armor bearer, to his assistant, and he says to him, Shlof charbacha v'dakreni ba, take out your sword and spear me through with it. Pen yavo ha'arelim e'ele udkaruni v'hit aleluvi. Lest these uncircumcised Philistines come and they find me and they capture me and they have their way with me. And they, Shaul was much more concerned or afraid that the Plishtim would desecrate him and desecrate what he represented, which was the king of Israel. So he did not want to be captured alive. But v'lo avana sekalav ki yare ma'od, the armor bearer did not want to do so. He was afraid he should kill the king of Israel. It's just something he couldn't do. So instead, v'yikach Shaul et acherev v'yipol aleh. Instead, Saul falls on his own sword. V'yar nase kilav ki met Shaul. Sekilav saw that Shaul had died. V'yipol gam hu al charbo v'yamot imo. So he himself threw himself on the sword and died together with Saul. V'yamot Shaul u'shloshet bana. On that day, Saul and his three sons died. His three sons, I assume, died in Pasuk Bet. V'yakub plishtim et Yonatan v'Avinadav et Malkishua. But in this case, Shaul and Nosei Kelav gam kol anashav b'yamahu yachdav, and all of his people were with him. It was the entire entourage, the entire the soldiers, and the royal family, and everybody. V'yiru anshei Yisrael asher be'ever ha'emek v'asher be'ever ha'yarden ki nasu anshei Yisrael. People, the Israelites, on the other side of the valley and the other side of the Yarden, they saw the tragedy that Saul had died, that Israel had fled from the battle, v'chimetu Shaul uvanav, and that Shaul and his sons had died. V'yazvu et ha'arim v'yanusu, they themselves fled from their cities, they began to run, because the plishtim were on the rampage. V'yavo plishtim v'yashu behem, all swaths of land, cities that the plishtim now took over. And eventually David will have to fight to get them back, but for now they have been taken over by the plishtim.
So what was it, all of Beit Shan Valley and stuff?
Not everything, but certainly cities that were Israelite strongholds, the plishtim have now, this incursion has gone into the core, into the heart of Emek Israel and over the valley. The next day after the battle was over, the plishtim came to collect their spoils of war, to take off from the bodies. Vayimtzu et Shaul vet Shloshet Banav Noflim Bahar Gaboah. They found the treasure of treasures, Saul and his three sons. Vayichlatu et Rosho. So they cut his head off. Why do you think they cut his head off?
Because of Goliath.
Right. Sort of tit for tat for what David did to Goliath. Vayichlatu et Rosho. Vayafshitu et Kelav. They took off his armor. Vayishalchu be'eretz plishtim. They sent it down to the Eretz Plishtim, Saviv Levaser Beit Atzabem Ve'etam, to go and tell all of their temples and the people to display Saul's head and armor, as if they finally, well, they have finally got rid of the king of Israel. Vayasimu et Kelav Beit Ashtarot. They put the armor in a place called Beit Ashtarot. Ve'et Gviatot Taku B'Chomat Beit Shan. The body they took, and they took, put on the wall in Beit Shan. Vayishmu elav Yoshvei Yavesh Gilad. Yavesh Gilad was that city on the other side of the Yarden that Saul had fought on behalf of in defense of back in Perek Yud Aleph, chapter 11, and the story of Pilagish Begiva many, many years earlier. Yeah, Yavesh Gilad keeps cropping up in various places.
Not in a good way.
Not necessarily. Saul's battle with the Yavesh Gilad was his first major significant campaign. The people of Yavesh Gilad are very good people, right? They appear in the story of Pelegish Begiva because they refuse to fight against Binyamin. Mm-hmm. And they refuse to fight in the civil war. They appear in the story of Yavesh Gilad and Perek Yalat because they're being attacked by Nachash ben Amon. Nobody else will come to the defense except for Saul. They appear here because they save the dignity of the king. Like there's the people of Yavesh Gilad are always portrayed in a positive light, but their story is a tragic one. They heard what the Plishtim did to Shaul. Vayakumu kol ish chayil. They took soldiers and they took an all night journey because they have to go from all the way from the other side of the Yarden all the way up to Eretz Plishtim. They took the body of Shaul and his sons. And they took him out to Yavesh Gilad. Some discussion whether they burnt the bodies, because that's what they did, or whether they burnt the clothing and the sort of quartered them and afforded a proper burial. Vayichut atzmotehem, they took their bones. Vayikberu tachat ha'eshel b'yavesha, and they buried them there in under the tree in Yavesh. Vayatzumu shivat yamim, and they fasted for 7 days. As a matter of respect for the king of Israel, died, sort of some suggestive source for Shiva, possibly, although Shiva's 7 days of Shiva is rabbinic, but certainly there's a connection here between 7 days. And of course, in the end, the story of Shmuel Aleph closes with the death of Saul, the indignity that the Plishtim quoted him, and then, of course, the role of Yavesh Gilad, the kind of full circle, where Saul's first act as king was to save the people of Yavesh Gilad, and the very last closing chapter, if you will, is that the people of Yavesh Gilad come to pay their respects to Saul. So there's a certain closing of the circle there.
Do we know what happened to his head?
No. We know what happens to his body later on. David comes and he brings him to Yerushalayim to burial, but no. And that's the closing chapter. We spent a lot of time talking about the details of this chapter and the various texts and issues, but I kind of wanted to put us into context that's how Sefer Shmuel Aleph closes, the story of Saul's death in the battle at the hands of his own sword because of the fear of the Plishtim, the defeat at the hands of the Plishtim. At the same time, the previous two chapters, which I'm not going to reread, but the previous two chapters were the story of David in Ziklag, chasing after after Amalek, defeating Amalek, that which Saul never did. In other words, the the contrast was the failure of Saul and the success of David, because David had done exactly what Saul was supposed to have done but never did, which was to defeat Amalek once, more or less once and for all, in his chase down in Nachal Besor, which was in the previous chapter. Which brings us to Shmuel Bet Perek Aleph. Vayhi acharei mot Shaul. That also, I guess to some extent, that's part of why they divided the book here, even though it's really one story, because the phrase Vayhi acharei mot Shaul, it was after the death of Saul. It sort of feels like it's starting a whole new piece, right? This kind of post-Saul world. Vayhi acharei mot Shaul, maybe. V'David shav mehakot et Amalek. So there's two battles that have now ended. Saul's battle in Har Gilboa has ended, and David has returned from his campaign against Amalek, which we settle along were happening simultaneously. Okay, so David is in the south at Ziklag, defeating, running southwards to defeat Amalek, and Shaul is up in Har Gilboa in Emek Israel dealing with the Plishtim, and now these two stories converge. So David returns to Tziklag. Vayeshev David b'Tziklag yamim shnayim. And he's sitting in Tziklag for 2 days, not knowing what was going. He knows that the Plishtim were heading north. How does he know the Plishtim were heading north to fight against Shaul?
Didn't the guy tell him, the guy that they helped on the way?
He was going. He had gone with them. Right, he had gone with him. This isn't a trick question.
I thought about that guy that was from.
We're going to get to that. So sort of about to be, but he knew about. He had gone with the Plishtim up north. It was only halfway through at Afeka
that he was turned down.
He certainly knew that the war was going to happen. He just couldn't be a part of it. Thank God, and so he was spared that crisis. But now he is sitting and waiting for some kind of news to what's going on in Har Gilboa. Vayhi bayom hashlishi. V'hine ish ba min ha-machaneh me'im Shaul. On the third day, a man came from the camp from Shaul. Uvgadav ku'im, with torn clothes. Va'adama rosho, mud on his head. That's probably not military camouflage, but more likely an expression of mourning. Vayhi bevo'el David, vayipol arza vayishtachu. Comes to David, falls on the ground, bows to him. Vayomer lo David, ei mize tavo. David says to him, where are you coming from? Vayomer elav, mimachane Yisrael nimlatati. I escaped from the camp of Israel, or the campaign. David says to him, "No, speak. Tell me what happened. What's going on?" Vayomer, he tells. Asher nasa'am min ha-milchama. He tells how Israel was running from the battlefield, fleeing for their lives. Ve'gam harbe nafal min ha'am bayamutu. And there were many casualties from Israel's side. Vegam Shaul v'Yonatan b'no metu, and amongst the casualties were Saul and his son Yonatan. Vayomer David alana hamagidlo. So he turns to this young lad who was telling him this news, and he said to him, Ech yedata ki met Shaul v'Yonatan b'no. How do you know that Saul and Yonatan died? Now, a bit of a mystery on David's part, because he just came from the battlefield. He's telling him the story. He's telling him that Israel's been defeated. You knew that that was a likelihood. You knew, right, your anticipation was there. Why would he cross-examine him specifically on the question of the authenticity of the message, the death of Saul and Yonatan? if he's lying about the whole story, so he's lying about the defeat, he's lying about... Why would you suspect him of lying? I mean, he says Israel was defeated, Israel was running, and Saul and Jonathan died.
Maybe it was more he didn't want to believe it.
Maybe. It's possible. He just didn't want to believe. Right? He was kind of denial. How do you know? Prove it to me, kind of denial. Mm-hmm. Possibly. I just
but
leave it as...
It impacts him directly.
Right.
It certainly does. He wants proof. He's not going to act without proof. It's also true. There may be something else going on there that's a kind of a hint to him. We'll see as the story unfolds. Vayomer ha-na'ar ha-magidlo. Interesting way to describe him twice now. The man who was telling him, right? This messenger. Ha-na'ar ha-magidlo. So he says to him, Nokroni kreti bahar al-Gilboa. I happen to be on Mount Gilboa. I was kind of passing through. Vinei Shaul nishan al-chanito. Behold, Saul was leaning on his sword. What leaning on his sword means is unclear, but given the fact that Saul had fallen on his sword, it's a fair likelihood that it meant that he was leaning on his sword, meaning not just as a staff, but had fallen on his sword. Vine harechev ubalea parashim hidbikuhu. Behold, the horses and the chariots, they were catching up to him. Right, that's what we read earlier in Perek Aleph, in Perek Lamed Aleph, Vayidbeku plishtim. Vayifen acharav vayireni. Saul turned around, he saw me there. Vayikrai elai, called out to me, Vayireni, said, here I am. Vayomer li, mi ata, he asked me, tell me, who are you? I told him, Amalaki Anochi, I'm an Amalekite. Vayomer Eli, Saul then said to me, Amod na alai umotteteni, come and kill me. Ki achazani hashavatz, because the shavatz has caught me. Now, it's unclear what this word shavatz means. Most of the Mefarshim translated as some kind of illness. That he felt that he was overwhelmed by this
agony, pain,
illness, right.
Throes of death,
right. Okay, all possibilities. The word shavatz is a unique word. It doesn't appear really in this context or in this way in other places. Remind me not to finish here today without telling you an alternative possibility for the meaning of Shavatz, but we'll come to it. Ki achazani Shavatz, ki kol od nafshi bi. As long as I still have life in me. V'amod alav, so I went over to him. King asks, I comply. V'amod alav, v'amod tateo. So I stood over him and I killed him. Ki yadati ki lo yichi achre niflo. I knew he wouldn't survive.
But this contradicts what we read at the end of the previous parak.
It's a different guy, no?
Different guy? What do you mean different guy?
This guy is telling David what happened. It's
right.
Not the same guy as his armor bearer.
No, not at all. This guy doesn't appear in the story in Perek Lamed
Aleph. Oh, so you're saying this is the guy that went down to...
No, I'm not saying anything. I'm just saying in the previous parak, Shaul kills himself.
Oh,
here
right.
It says this guy did him a favor and killed him.
And also, he's from Amalek.
And he is from Amalek. And he is from Amalek.
All true.
And the plot thickens. And he continues, and he says, V'akach anezer asher al rosho, v'etzada asher al zro'o. So I took the crown from his head, and I took the special royal bracelet from his arm, and I brought them to you here. And here they are.
Wow.
So that's proof. That's proof.
But it's so strange. He's an Amalekite.
Right. That's proof. That is proof that Saul, in fact, has died.
Right.
David bivkadav. David takes his clothes. Vayikra'em, and he rents them and he tears them. V'gam kol anashim asherito, they tear their garment. Vayispidu, vayifku, they eulogize him and they cry. Vayatsumu ada arev, and they fast till the evening. Al Shaul vayonatan beno, v'al am Hashem, v'al beit Yisrael, ki naflu b'charev. Saul and Yonatan, God's people, house of Israel, falling by the sword, defeated in battle. This was a terrible tragedy and calamity, a day in Israel, day of fasting, day of crying, day of eulogizing. In the meantime, back to the story, because we're not done yet.
Is there a reason they don't mention the other two sons?
It's unclear, other than the fact that they were far less significant than Yonatan. Yonatan was the heir to the throne.
Right.
So in terms of the national tragedy of it, right, there were lots of people who died. But in terms of the national tragedy of it, it would have been a reference to Saul and Yonatan. They're the only two people relevant in the rest of the story. The rest of the people don't play a role in Sefer Shmuel Aleph. But it is a good question. The other good question is, there's another son who's not mentioned here.
At all.
There's a fourth son. As mentioned in the sons of Saul, there are four sons. Three of them die in battle. There's a fourth thing who will become very important later in the story because he becomes a challenge to the throne of David. Right? But that's a story yet to unfold. His name is Ishbosheth. Mechazek David bevagadav. Oh, I read that. Pasuk Yud Gimel. Back to the story. Back to David's conversation with Nar Amalek. Nar Hamagidlo. Vayomer David el Hanar Hamagidlo. Right. So now he tells this Nar, and he says to him, "Emi ze ata? Where are you from?" Which is an odd question because he just told him.
He said he was a
Right. Well, think about it for a second. But what were the last two words? In his mind, in the way he describes the story, what were the last two words Saul ever heard?
That he was an Amalekite.
What was the last two words that Saul heard in his life?
That Amalekite said that he was an Amalekite.
Amalekanochi.
Uh-huh.
Think of the irony of that. The very last two words Saul ever heard in his life was Amalekanochi.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's agonizing.
Right? So David says to him, "Emi ze ata, where are you from?" Which is an odd question because he just told him that he's an Amalekite. Fayomer, he says, "Ben ish ger Amaleki anochi. I am the son of a ger Amaleki." Unclear what that means.
Convert
to Amalekite?
I leave it as an open conversation. Right? We have to come back to it. But it's an unclear answer. A ger Amaleki. Amalekite, convert. Ger can mean many things. It can be a convert. It can be somebody who gar, who's somebody who lives in a particular area, right? A son of somebody who lives. Right? It's unclear what the word. The word itself simply means a stranger or a foreigner, right? Its application to a convert is a borrowed application. Mm. And in the Torah, you have it's called a ger toshav. So it's somebody who comes from the outside who lives in a different foreign resident is called a ger. And ger toshav. Mm. Eventually, that status becomes somebody can become part of the Jewish people, so we can come to change it to something called the ger tzedek. But it's a rabbinic language in a much later application and use. The word ger means gar Amalek, right? Lives amongst Amalek.
Resides.
Vayomer elav David. So David says to him, "Ech lo yareta lishloach yadcha l'shechet et Mashiach Hashem? How dare you? How dare you? The audacity to set forth your hand against the Anointed One of God?" Vayikra David l'achad me'anearim. So David called over one of his soldiers. Vayomer, and he commanded him, "Gash begabo. Vayakeu, vayamot. Off with his head. Now." And David has him killed, executed on the spot. Vayomer elav David. David says to him, I assume before he died, not after he died, "Damcha al rashecha. Your blood is on your head. Ki ficha ana b'cha lemor. Your own mouth has convicted you, saying, Anochi motati et Mashiach Hashem. I killed the anointed one of God. Off with your head.
Was this guy stupid? What did he think David's reaction was going to be?
It's the best question of the chapter. Was this guy stupid?
Right? I mean, well,
that is exactly the question.
What did he think the reaction was going to be? I mean, did he think he was going to reward him? I mean, okay, he gave proof that David had died, but why would he say?
Why would he say?
Unless
I think he thought he was doing him a favor because he said that he was an Agni and he asked him to kill him.
Right.
So he thought that
I'll start the question three steps earlier. Is the story true?
No. Not according to
we don't know.
We don't know. Okay,
well, there's two stories. But he also didn't know about the fact that Shaul was trying to kill David for God knows how long.
Maybe he did. Who knows?
But I'm just saying, we don't know the story about Shaul. The story is, we
don't know. It could very well be. And on top of all of that, there's another mystery. Why does David kill him?
Because he killed Mashiach Hashem.
Did he?
He said he, because he said
he
did.
He said he did.
David believed him. I mean, evidently, he believed him.
Maybe he believed him, maybe he didn't. Right. No verification, no witnesses, no testimony, no court system, just off of your head because you...
But he's a Amalekite?
Right.
I guess he didn't hesitate of self-incrimination.
Right. We read chapter Lamed Aleph, this Perek Lamed Aleph. We read the previous chapter. This story of this Na'ar Amalek does not appear in the previous chapter. So one of three possibilities, either he made the whole story up, in which case he didn't do anything wrong, he just made the story up.
But he took the booty from the camp.
Okay, so we'll talk about that. But he made the whole story up. Taking the booty is not a capital offense. And David nonetheless kills him, which is a question. Why does he kill him? And why does he make the story up? Or maybe he didn't make the story up. Maybe Taka, David fell on his sword.
He didn't die.
Right? The story leaves us there. He fell on his sword. The story in chapter 31 just tells us the final result. He fell on his sword and he died. But in between, we don't know if that was instantly or 24 hours later. In between, we have this Amalekite who comes along and says, I saw him there, and I saw him fall, Nish'an al-Chanito, resting on his sword. We don't know if that means resting, like waiting for the battle to start, or literally leaning on his sword because he fell on his sword,
and he was still alive, wounded.
And he says that he was wounded in the death throes. One of the most... actually, I was going to do it later, but you know, I don't know how far we're going to get. I'll do it now because it's really interesting. Take a look at source.
Are we supposed to do that?
Oh yeah, sorry. Take a look at source 6, which is the Rabag's interpretation of the word Shavatz.
Oh, that's what you said. You could
run over. Right. I want to be sure I get to it because it's unique. Right. Most Mefarshim translate Shavatz as some kind of death throes or illness or fever or, I'm dying kind of thing. Rabag is bothered by the fact that the word Shavatz doesn't appear anywhere else. It's source 6. Is bothered by the fact that the word Shavatz is unique. And there are places where it does appear, but in a different context. For example, one of the Kohanim garments, one of the big day kahuna, is called the Ketonet Tashbetz. What's a Ketonet Tashbetz? It's a white garment that's made up of tiny little boxes. Like it's kind of pilled, checkered type of cloth. Okay? In modern Hebrew, a mishbetzet is a box.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah.
So what is Kiyachazani Ashavatz? Look what he says. It's really interesting. Source 6. Haratzon bazeh lefi mas she'achshov, what I think it means, shehalavush, sheya lavush, haya mishubatz. The clothing Shaul was wearing was boxed, meaning armor.
Oh.
Layered.
Like
boxes.
Scales.
Exactly. Scales. V'lohosif lochozek to give him strength. So that a sword should not be able to easily penetrate. V'yamar Shaul shechanit shenafal alav achaz lo ha-shabatz v'lezeh lo yayachol lavo lezakro. He had a failed suicide attempt. He had a failed attempt to fall on a sword because it got caught in the scales of his armor. Ki achazani ha-shabatz. Not of the death throes, but the physical description of the armor that's caught his sword. So now he can't die. And now he's stuck. Physically stuck. So he turns to the to whoever's passing by, because the Nar had already, right, the Naseh Kelav had already killed himself. He had already fallen on his sword, so there was nobody left there to finish the job. So he sees a Amalekite walking by. He says to him, okay, so you do it. It's a fascinating interpretation of the word Shavatz. But in the end, it comes back to the same question. Why? What actually happened? Was he part of the story in chapter 31 in the previous events? If so, he's telling the truth. Why does David kill him? He was commanded to kill the king by the king's command. Right? Shaul had asked him to kill him. So why? That's not a death. That's not a capital offense. And if he didn't, if he wasn't commanded to kill the king, and if he made the whole story up, so maybe he didn't kill him altogether. Maybe he just saw him dead, and he took the spoils of war. So then you have no justification whatsoever for killing him. So part of the mystery is David's behavior. Why does David kill this Nar Maliki? It's a very difficult question. I'll show you how difficult the question is before we answer it, but I'll show you a couple of things.
So if he didn't kill the king...
Mm-hmm. Then he made the whole story up.
Why did he bring the crown?
If you were running to David after Saul had died, wouldn't you bring the king's crown to David?
And you'd think he'd be happy.
You'd find favor in the new who's going to be the new king.
Wouldn't that be a great thing to do? Bring David, right?
Yeah.
I don't know. If I was there and I saw the king's crown, and David was sitting there in exile and waiting for his opportunity to rise to the throne. Perfect opportunity.
Right? I bet he was
more than one more than one cabinet post has been presented in that way. Right? I don't think he anticipated what David's reaction was going to be, but that's but to understand so let's start from the question of why David reacted the way he did. Why did he take his life? What was the justification? And before we answer the question, just to kind of elaborate how difficult this issue is, right? Really the challenge is to identify the question sometimes. The answers aren't necessarily as powerful as the questions. I'll show you a couple of observations. Take a look, for example, at source 1, which is, again, the Ravag, but the Ravag offers. Rambag deals with this question. He says to Rambag, "Yesh li tamoa madu tzivat David lehorgo." Same question all the Mefarshim ask. Radak, Rambag, Rashi, the Medrash. Why did David command his Nar to kill this Amalaki? Assuming David took him at his word, he was acting on Saul's command, which would mean that he, certainly not a capital crime, if the king commands you to take his life, and if he didn't take him at his word, which the Rabbat doesn't ask, but assuming for a moment the flip side, he didn't take him at his word, and he doubted the whole veracity of the story, then you have no justification for killing him anyway, because...
You can't know if he really killed him.
That's right. Maybe he didn't kill him at all. Like, you made the whole story up. There's no witnesses. So here's what the Rabbag says. Hine asad David zeh lo hora'at sha'a. Rabbag says David acted as a hora'at sha'a. What's a hora'at sha'a? Hora'at sha'a means like a special...
Like an emergency.
Emergency.
Military emergency.
Yeah, military emergency or an exceptional case for dealing with or acting in a way that may not necessarily be according to the letter of the law, but has a greater need.
They still have that today in Israel.
Yeah. In various contexts, is a concept. It's a concept in halacha too. Or atcha'a, meaning there are moments where, for example, there's Nevi'im who did things that are halachically unacceptable, but they did so because of the instruction of the hour, meaning it's a literal translation, meaning the moment, the necessity of the moment overweighed all other considerations. A famous example is Eliyahu and Har Carmel. Eliyahu brings all the Nevi'i Baal up to Har Carmel, and he has a whole showdown with them, and he brings it, takes an animal and puts it on the Mizbech. You're not allowed to bring a korban outside of the Beit HaMikdash. So forgetting everything else, here's Eliyahu bringing a korban on a Mizbeach on Mount Carmel.
And it was a temporary thing. It right. didn't change the regular halacha, in other words.
Right. But as a hora'at sha'ah, at that moment he needed to act for a greater good, if you will. Hine asad David zelo ha'at sha'ah, for what purpose? Shelo yekelu ha'anashim lishloach yadam v'machut. So nobody should think it a light matter to take their hand against, lift their hand against the king. Ulezot asiba be'in nizhar mishloach yad b'Shaul k'sheya b'marav v'yafa p'sheya rodfo v'yamutar lehargo. Rabag lishitato. We saw this Rabag back in previous chapter 24, 26. Shaul, Rabbah claims that that's why David didn't want to kill Shaul when they were in the cave. Even though he had every right to, David, Shaul was chasing him, Shaul was pursuing him, David had every right of self-defense to kill Shaul, doesn't do it, and the question was why he doesn't. We offered a different answer, but the Rabbah's answer there is the same as Rabbah's answer here, which was that David was protecting the integrity of the kingship because... Who's the next king of Israel? David. And if you create a culture in which it's acceptable to kill the king, then where does that leave the next king of Israel and the king after that and the king after that? Right? So, again, it's to the Rabag, the question is a very powerful one. Why did David kill him? He had no justification legally to kill him. And it must have been some extra legal consideration. And in this case, he says, it was for the integrity of the Malchus, which makes it a little bit self-serving. Yeah. I don't think that's what the Rabag means, but nonetheless, I think it highlights the challenge of the issue. The problem with the Rabag's interpretation from a Pshat perspective is that it ignores the emphasis in the story. The emphasis in the text is constantly over the fact that this guy is from Amalek. The Rabag's perspective, David would have killed him regardless of who he is. And the whole issue of Amalek is irrelevant. And yet, twice, actually three times in the story, once in his review of the events, when he says, Shaul asked me who I was, and I said, Amalek Yanochi. And then the second time when David says to him, Emi Ze'ata, which is again a question, he just said, Amalek Yanochi, I'm an Amalekite. So why did he ask him the question again? And he says, you are an Amalekite. He says, where are you from? And he says, Ben Ishger Amalek Yanochi. So what relevance is the origin, the ethnic origin of this guy to be from Amalek to the reason why David kills him if David only killed him because he wanted to protect the integrity of the Malchus? It didn't make a difference. It could have been anybody. You follow the problem?
And he still doesn't really know where he's from.
And we still don't have a clear picture of who he is or what he is. Again, just to highlight the challenge, and again we'll come back to a resolution of this challenge, if not today, then next week, but to highlight the challenge, I want to show you two midrashim that take probably the most extreme answers to this question, why David kills them. And again, I don't think it's necessarily pshat, but it just highlights the problem. The first is a midrashic source called the Psikta Rav Kahana. This psik that I've got, both of these midrashim, by the way, source 2 and 3, are on the story of Amalek and Pasha B'Shalach. The Torah says, Ki yala keska milchamala ba'amalek milchamala Hashem ba'amalek midardor. Amalek went to war against the throne of God. God has an eternal battle against Amalek for generations to come. Right? That whole theology, says so the Medrash says, source 2, starts with the position that you're not allowed to accept converts from Amalek. You can accept converts from any nation, but not from Amalek. Vayomer David alenar hamagidlo, emi ze'ata. David said to him, where are you from? Vayomer ben ish ger Amaleki anochi. I am from a son of a ger Amaleki. Amar Reb Yitzchak, do'eg ha'edomiyaya. Reb Yitzchak says, this guy, we know exactly who he was. He was Doeg HaEdomi.
Oh my God.
That's a name from the past.
Where did he show up? All right, it gets better. Vayomer David, so David says to him, Damcha al Rashecha, your blood is on your head. Now, if you look at the text, if you look at the pasuk itself, you'll notice that the word Damcha is a Kriyan Ktiv. What is a Kriyan Ktiv? Right, it's written one way, it's written another.
Yeah.
So it's written Damcha, but it's written with an extra yud, Damecha. Bloods, in the plural. So Rav Yitzchak says, back to the Medrash, Amar Rav Yitzchak, Damecha Ktiv, the Pasuk is in the plural, Amar lo, harbe damim shafachta, benov irakonim. You spilled a lot of blood in the story of Nov. So he takes revenge against this Doeg Adami, for the execution of the Kohanim of Nov. So
it really
says.
Now,
nothing to do with Shoal. It's an extraordinary medrash. How do Ega Edomi comes to be a Ger Amaleki is unclear. Doeg is an Edomite. If he's not Jewish, right? It's not clear that Doeg Edomi means that he's not Jewish, right? Edomi could mean an Edomite. Could also just mean that was his from the area he lived in Edom. Or he was some other accolade, or another name, but let's assume for the moment that he's describing him as somebody who's outside of the Jewish people. He's an Edomite. How does he come to be in the Ger Amaleki? Like, where's the connection? But it does explain one mystery.
Why David killed him?
Well, it explains why, it's an attempt to explain why David kills him. It also would explain what he's doing there. Because the battle is between Shaul and... Plishtim in Emek Yisrael. Plishtim and Amalek is nowhere to be found. Amalek are way down south.
Yeah.
So one of the mysteries is, what is he doing there?
Right.
If he's Doeg Adami, it would explain. Right? Doeg Adami was Shaul's general.
Right.
Or one of his generals. So it explains a lot of things, but Pshat, it certainly is not.
Still
because
it's
there's
so
no... And the difference in Pshat and Drash is that Pshat has to be built around what's in the text, whereas Drash can introduce elements into the text that aren't there. Fundamentally, the difference in Pshat and Drash. To introduce Doeg Edomi into the story here, where there's no reference to him in the text, that would be the classic example of Drash rather than Pshat. It has value, it has very powerful irony in the world of Shaul, that the guy who killed him is somehow connected to, if not the person, but at least the crime of Nov Irakonim, right? If I had to understand what the Medrash is trying to get at, you could see the trace of the story from David to the very first crime Shaul ever committed against David was killing Nov when David went to escape. That was the very first. So you talk about full circle. Right? I can see where the Medrash is getting at. In the pshat of the story, it would be hard to sustain. The Mechilta de Rabbi Yishmael takes a somewhat different approach based upon the same principle, that it's, we're dealing with an, it says, Ish ger Amaleki Anochi. So the Medrash says, Rabbi Eliezer Omer, Nizkar David bota sha'ah, David remembered at that moment, Ma she'ne'emar le Moshe Rabbeinu, the halacha that was taught to Moshe, namely, Im yevo achad mikol omot she'ma'olam li'itkayer she'ikabluhu, Amalek lo yikablu. You're allowed to accept converts from any nation on earth except from
Amalek.
Ammon and Moab also, but we'll leave Ammon and Moab out of the conversation. And therefore, immediately, Vayomer Elav David Damcha al Roshecha ki picha anabacha lekach ne'emar mechamal Hashem b'Amalek midor dor. Therefore, he kills him. not allowed to be from Amalek. From Amalek, it's a death sentence, kills him. So again, Medrash is suggesting that he kills him because he's from Amalek, not for any other reason. But that is also very difficult because that's not in the pshat of the story. The pshat of the story is that he kills him because you killed the Mashiach Hashem. Well, at least you said you killed the Mashiach Hashem.
Yeah.
So the throw, the reason for, he killed, for him killing him to be either because he's Doeg Adami and executing him for the murder of Nov, or because he's an Amalekite and he has no business being from Amalekite and living, either one of those interpretations becomes difficult to understand the pshat of the story. Add to the mystery the fact that, in fact, it's unclear that he is even, although he says he's an Amalek. But he says on the one hand, Amalek Yanochi, and then immediately David asks him, where are you from? Emizata. And he says, Ben Ger Amalek Yanochi. I'm the son of a Ger Amalek. So what does that mean?
Not a direct answer.
So take a look at the two possibilities in the Radak and the Rabag. Again, it comes back to the same question, which is he an Amalekite or is he a Ger Amalekite? What does a Ger Amalekite mean? What does it mean? It's not convert. It means a Ger, lives. So look at the Radak. Radak says, Lo sha'al me'eza am. Didn't ask him what nation he's from. He said, he says to him, the question was, E mize'ata, where are you from? Not, what nation are you from? Why? Sharishama misipur dvarav ki amalekihu. The man admitted to being a Amalekite. So then what's the question? Ella, sha'alo me'eza makom. He asked him where he's from, what place? Klamar, Im haya gar be'artso, she eretz Amalek. If he lives in his own land, which is the land of Amalek, and the land of Amalek is the land of the Negev, Sinai, Negev, south. And if so, ech nikwala mechama, how did he get up north into this war? He's coming from Emek Yisrael, he's coming from up north. So David says to him, how did you get there? What are you doing there? If you're an Amalekite. Vuana ki gam aviv ba me'eretz Amalek. What is he says? Ben ish ger Amaleki. I'm the son of a Amalekite sojourn. Ve'gar be'eretz Yisrael. My father's an Amalekite. We live in Emek Yisrael. We just we're traveling through, or we live there. We're foreign residents. We happen to be right Amalekite living in Emek Yisrael. It's not the end of the world. Right? Not strange. Stranger things have happened. Right? My father is an Amalekite. He happened to be living in Emek Beit Shan or in, in Tzfat or in Haifa or somewhere in the area. And I happened to come across the battle. I heard noise. Right? There was a big tumult going on in Emek Yisrael. I came down to see what was going on. But according to that, he's an Amalekite living in
Eretz
Yisrael. The Rabag takes the exact opposite approach, but to the same point. Which is that he's not talking about a ger in the context of a ger tzedek. When you see somebody who lives. V'idmesh shezeh na'ara mevaser lo haya ger tzedek. It doesn't ger like meaning I'm a ger tzedek, a convert in the classic sense of the term. Af pi she'amar ben ish ger amalaki. Kvar amar zeh la'arot she'eino amalaki b'emet. He wanted to tell David, he's not really a Amalekite. He's really an Israelite. Aval aviv hitkoveh be'eretz Amalek. But he's an Israelite living in Eretz Amalek. Eretz Amalek is down south. So he happens to be living down south. So he says to him, Shaul asked me who I was. I told him, I'm an Amalekite, because it's like saying I'm an American. I live in America. I'm an American. I'm really a Jew, but I'm living in America. I'm an American. I'm really an Israelite living in Eretz Amalek. So he calls himself an Amalekite. Very dangerous thing to do when you're talking to Shaul, when you're talking to David. Not exactly what I would say, a smart guy. He certainly is not. V'zot etat tshuvato l'David, ki kva yada David mipiv ki amalekihu, aval sha'alo al ha'makom sh'haya chone bo, v'hu yishiv ki ba'avu ha'makom nikra amaleki lo sh'haya mimishpachat amalek. He's really not an Amalekite. He's really Israelite. Either way.
That's weird, though, too.
Right? Either way. It's just The whole story is odd. He admits to being from Amalek, willingly, openly, comes to David, says, I killed Shaul. Maybe he did, maybe he didn't. It's unclear. The whole story is a mystery. And then David immediately responds by saying, off with his head. Because, fill in the blank, because he's an Amalekite, because he's Doeg Edomi,
because
he killed Mashiach Hashem, or he didn't kill Mashiach Hashem, or he lied about killing Mashiach. What are you doing this? So the truth is, and to me it's a little bit of a mystery, the one source that the Mefarshim don't quote is the only place in the text where David himself explains why he killed him. Right? And that, where is that, you ask?
Yeah. Okay.
When he's talking, no? No, he doesn't say what. Well, again, what he says to him is odd, because does he believe him, does he not believe him? So take a look in chapter 4.
I want to get back to this guy, though.
Yes,
again.
Maybe we'll leave chapter 4 for next week.
I want to get back to this guy. When he came to David, was he expecting some sort of reward? I mean, what was he ultimately expecting? Besides the fact that he could prove that Shaul had died. Was he expecting a reward? I mean, I'm trying to figure out this guy.
I would think he did expect a reward. Yeah, he's
I'm only contemplating whether I have time to answer your question.
It is because
it really is the answer. It really is the mystery. Okay, the core of the mystery is what was this guy expecting, and therefore how did David read his message?
We can wait till next week.
But I'm gonna throw it out there. I'm gonna put the question out, and then we're going to adjourn till next week because. That gives us an opportunity to stay tuned. Look at Perek Dalet. Perek Dalet, just to kind of give you a context of what's going on in Perek Dalet. Perek Dalet is the story of, or the end of the story of Ishbosheth. Who is Ishbosheth?
The son of Shaul.
The last son of Shaul, the fourth son who doesn't die in battle. And in the aftermath of Saul's death, David makes a claim to the throne, but Avner ben Ner, Saul's general, anoints Ishbosheth as the next king of Israel. And so for the next couple of years until chapter 5, we have a civil war going on between Israel and Judah over who is the rightful heir to the throne. Is it Saul's son Ishbosheth? Is it David? It's a major battle, major war, many, many, many casualties on both sides. It's a terrible tragedy. I summarized it in two sentences, which is terribly unfair, but that's... Now, the story ends with two people who kill Ishbosheth. And they come to David, expecting David to be very happy about it. Pasuk Zayin, the two people, their names are Rechav and Ba'ana. Perek Dalet, Pasuk Zayin. They come to his house. He's lying on his bed. They kill Ishbosheth. Evidently, everybody liked to take their heads off. I don't understand. I guess proof positive that somebody was dead is to remove their head. They take the head and they go running all night long to where? To David. They bring the head of Ishbosheth to David in Hebron. Behold the head of your enemy. May God avenge you today from your enemy Saul and his seed. Pasuk Tet. Vayan David. Now, what do you think David did to these two guys? Right. David did not take to this story lightly. David responded to Rechav and Bana and Bnei Rimon HaBe'eroti. By the living God who has saved me from every trouble. Yamagid li lemor, hine met Shaul. Once upon a time, I'll tell you a story, he says. Yep. Once upon a time, there was somebody who came to tell me that Saul had died. He was in his own eyes simply telling me the story. And just for telling me that Saul had died, I took and I killed him in Ziklag. Because he gave me the news. How much more so for good, for you wicked people, to take a righteous person like Ishbosheth and to kill him on his bed? I'm not going to avenge his blood on your heads? Offer their heads. And if I kill the guy in Ziklag just for telling me about the death of Saul, how much more so am I going to kill you for having executed a righteous person?
But they cut off his hands and feet.
Yeah, cut off his hands and feet. Yeah, they kind of. I didn't read the end of this. I mean, there was a reason I didn't read the end of the chapter. There's only so much you can do at 10:30 in the morning. All right. But the we're going to adjourn here and come back to this piece next week. But clearly, there's the key lies in David's own admission. What's missing in David's description of why he killed this guy?
That the guy said he killed Shaul.
Right? That a guy said he killed Shaul. He says to him, I killed him because he reported to me. Right. So he doesn't say anything about the guy saying that he killed Saul or that he was Yishloach Yad Mashiach Hashem. He tells him, I killed him just for telling me, just for sharing the news. I killed him. Right. And the other piece that's missing is, who is the Na'ar who he kills? That's also not here. It doesn't say anything about him being an Amalekite, being a Gerin. He just said, the guy, the Mivaser, the guy who told me. I killed him. Why? Because he told me. You bring me such news, I'm going to kill you.
But we're not supposed to kill the messenger, right?
In this case, kill the messenger. Shoot the messenger off with his head. Right? So obviously there's much more here than meets the eye, but the clue starts, I think, with the fact that David doesn't kill him because he's a Amalekite, and he doesn't kill him because he killed Saul. He kills him because he told them the news. That's a mystery. So we will have to...
And they were in the civil wars.
And well,
that's coming.
That's coming. Oh. Right? This is right? I'm talking about this Amalekite. So we will, Bezrat Hashem, pick up from here next week.